Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
For better or worse, the home field advantage continues to be about as valuable as it's been all season for Houston. And Carlos Correa reminds Jim Crane he should have bought Dior. It's episode 44 of Stone Cold Stros, and it starts right now. Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange. I'm joined by senior content contributor Charlie Palillo. Follow him on Twitter at Palillo and read his weekly column on sportsmap.com. Next to him is sportsmap.com editor Josh Jordan. Follow him on Twitter at JoshJordan975. Just a reminder, the three of us host a Texans podcast called Texans on Tap on our other YouTube channel, Sportsmap Texans, and also wherever you listen to your podcast. Charlie, it's episode 44. Which Astros player who wore the number 44 are you thinking of this week?
You used past tense, so I will follow accordingly. Unless something unfortunate happens with his career arc, Yordan Alvarez will be part of a number 44 retirement ceremony, but that should be a joint number retiring. Justin Verlander throws a wrench into the works because with the two World Series titles and two Cy Youngs, even though he's pitched a much shorter duration than Roy Oswalt pitched with the Astros, Roy Oswalt had the best, when you factor in length of body of work, the best pitching career of any Houston Astro ever. Better than Nolan Ryan, better than Larry Durker, better than Roger Clemens, who was also a compressed window. Roy Oswalt was, well, wizard-like. And also so self-effacing that it took like 2 years into his career before he politely corrected the media, which had been calling him Roy Oswalt. And a quick shout out also to Danny Darwin, who wore 44 for about a half decade here. One of the better nicknames in Astros history, Dr. Death, for his mien on the mound.
Well, guys, let's get into it. If there's one thing you can count on with Houston, it's that former Astros always seem to be their kryptonite. And outside of Gerrit Cole, there's probably no more formidable former Stro to face in the postseason than Carlos Correa. In a team full of postseason vets, Correa's leadership probably doesn't make the difference here on Houston. But how critical of an edge does it give a team like Minnesota?
Well, when he hits, a whole lot. Intangibles are only valuable if they are supporting tangibles, as in Astros catching. I know, I'm getting ahead of the script. Carlos Correa was a bad player this season, right? Collecting his $33 million in the first year, the 6 years, $200 million, for which he settled after the Giants and Mets pulled the contracts. He flunked the physicals. Correa was a 230 hitter with an OPS of 711. Defensive metrics falling off, ankle problems, plantar fasciitis that had him on the injured list. He didn't even play the last 2 weeks of the regular season. Well, over the first two games of this series, best overall player on the field. Yordan with the three home runs, but Correa impact offensively, defensively. I don't know if he processed it to say, remember, I was a pretty good shortstop too when he made just a spectacular play. And oh, that arm throwing out Jeremy Pena for the last out in game two. But Correa, you know, he was an Astros version of Mr. October, tremendous clutch resume. There were some ups and downs, but the overall ups, right? He vaulted forward in postseason play. So the leadership and all that is great, but if you're going to hit cleanup, you better hit. And game two, he knocked the Astros senseless.
Yeah, he's got that edge. He knows how these guys approach hitters, what they're trying to do in these scenarios. I mean, think about it. He's the guy that runs to the pitching mound every time. So he was there for all those conversations of how do we want to attack this guy? What do we want to do here? He mentioned in the postgame show, he knew, you know, when Fromber was pitching against him, there's that last at bat that they were going to pitch the ball down. It'd be a sinker or a changeup. He knew what Maldi was going to be dialing up for him, and he made the adjustment there. So that's not going to change. You know, he's going to have intel for pitchers on his team, hitters on his team. But, you know, that's okay. The Astros are really good, you know, about talking with each other, what they're seeing from pitchers and making adjustments. So that's something they're going to have to do. But it is a little weird seeing it, you know, with Correa in your own building. But hey, it's the postseason. The Astros are no strangers to Gerrit Cole and George Springer and Carlos Correa, and you know, having to face Gerrit Cole after him playing on your team. Astros have been through this before. They got to hit the ball better. They got to score some runs.
So, Josh, you're suggesting that Carlos Correa in that two RBI at bat outsmarted the genius catcher? Correa was always a thoughtful and expansive interview on here, and I thought he was just fabulous with his openness and insight in the postgame to game two, specifically to that at bat, but also in addressing, I don't think it was really surprising, but fairly lusty booing. Some of it envy of, gee, wish he's still here, as he's getting one clutch hit after another during the course of the game. But it grew into a louder booing than I thought, as much as anything, in-game envy. And as Correa said, I'm not going to make anything of it. I'm not on their team anymore. They want me to strike out every time.
Yeah, I would just point out,
nice.
Maybe pitching inside a little bit more. I would. Hunter Brown struck him out with an inside fastball. That's something where you don't want Correa to be able to get extended and use his arms to really shoot balls the other way. And jamming him seems to work. I would have liked to seen a little more of that in the past game. So hopefully that's something they'll do here moving forward.
Short series baseball. You don't know. A matchup can be favorable and not work out at all. But the Astros offense in a nutshell in 2023, the first two games of the series, right? Altuve jumpstarts you in game one with the leadoff home run. Then Yordan does his thing. And then game two, they do nothing basically until the outcome is determined. Alvarez with the 2-run homer when you're down 6-0 late. So you either show out or the season can end. In Minneapolis, the Twins were a 47-34 home team this year. Fortunately, Major League Baseball assigning the Astros day games. Temperatures will be in the mid-50s, which is cool, but not onerous. I mean, Seattle was about that, the night games the last week of the season. But I would say not optimal for the Astros playing in the mid-50s, but better than if you play at night where the temperatures will be dropping through the 40s. Pitching matchup, game three, obviously favors Minnesota. Game four is probably no better than a toss-up. So if offered right now, if you're the Astros, yes, I'll take my chances in a rematch against Pablo Lopez, who absolutely dominated them in game two. Well, he would be the Twins game five starter Friday night with Verlander on 5 days rest, unless the Astros were to get a little panicky if down 2-1, contemplate coming back with Verlander on 3 days rest, thinking, well, we'd have Fromber for game five. Well, right now, would that be such a good thing to have Fromber in reserve for game five? So should the Astros be down 2-1, I think you hope like mad that Urquidy, France, bullpen game, and the bats can get you through, and then it's JV on home ice in game five.
Which is Friday the 13th, by the way.
Or they just went to Minneapolis. It's not like that's off the table. And the Astros so much better on the road this year. This would be a good time to send up a reminder flare of that.
Well, if games one and two were a microcosm of the offense, then they certainly were of the pitching as well, because Verlander didn't have his best stuff on Saturday, but he still gave Dusty a really good outing. And Hector Neris come in, a guy who has been nails for you for most of the season, but has also kind of walked the razor's edge at times. He almost gave it all back. We didn't even mention Graveman not making the DS roster due to that bum shoulder. We've mentioned, you know, Framber Valdez and, you know, kind of seeing the ugly end of what his season looked like on Sunday. Now the Astros go to the cold Midwest. You've got Javier versus Sonny Gray. I look at this, the question marks around, you know, your starters, your long relief. Now you've got a question about Neris. Do the Astros have enough pitching to get out of this series?
Sure they do, because they only need to win two out of three games. Maybe they win one 11-8, like the Rangers beat the Orioles in game two in that series. Right, we're tantalizingly close to an Astros-Rangers American League Championship Series. Talk about a buzzkill if it's the Rangers who ultimately get there and the Twins take out the Astros. You know, Sonny Gray pitched twice against the Astros this year. Well, it was very early in the season. But this is a guy who may be top three for American League Cy Young Award. He was third in earned run average at 2.79. First start against the Astros this season, 7 innings, 1 run, 13 strikeouts. He has plus-plus stuff. Second time they saw him, 6+ innings, 3 runs, but it was 1 run. He gave up a single and a walk to start the seventh, and then the bullpen gave up a grand slam to Altuve. So Sonny Gray is really good. You know that crowd is going to be gone crazy. That shouldn't rattle the Astros, but it is a boost to the Twins. Right? If Minnesota plays from in front, that can be a real problem. On Hector Neris, I'm just going to say that's one of those stuff happens stuff. The entire season, Hector Neris never gave up more than two earned runs in an outing. Once he gave up three runs, one was unearned. And so that he implodes, gives up four runs in one inning. Well, at least it happened when they had a 5-0 lead instead of a 3-0 lead.
Yeah, I kind of expected something like that to happen with Neris after all the shenanigans in Seattle. You know, and then he was so great in the Arizona series. I just figured all that emotion going in that one way, he would have one performance where he didn't perform as well. So at least it was in a game where, you know, you still came away with the victory. I'm still going to go back to him if I need him. He's been too good, you know, to not trust in those big situations. And with Javier, even Verlander, as great as he was the other night, he gave you six innings. You know, Fromber got knocked out early in this last game. If Javier gives you five, you're going to be happy with that. And just looking back, knock on wood, he hasn't given up more than four since July. So as far as earned runs, so if Javier can kind of keep you in the game, only give up a couple runs, give you around five innings, I think you're going to be happy with that. And if you look at his last four starts, he hasn't given up more than three and mostly gone five or six. He went 4 2/3 in one of those games. So I think Javier, he's pitching better than we've seen him pitch for a good portion of the season. So if there's ever a time to kind of lean on him, and he's familiar with this back against the wall in Philly in the World Series when you're down and you need a big performance and he throws the combined no hitter. Javier's been in these types of situations before. I think you just have to trust him and hope for the best.
But three runs in five innings, that's not so good. And against Sonny Gray, your bullpen better be perfect, and you hope you can eke out 4-3. Simplest summation for what Javier needs to get done in game three is keep the ball in the ballpark. He had major gopher ball problems this season. You know, he and Hunter Brown were the two guys who gave up the most. Twins tying the Rangers, the American League lead in home runs. The Twins have shown their capability to take it deep. At home, they're going to have their lineup loaded with left-handed hitters. And one thing in the matchup game, you know, Rocco Baldelli has in his favor, right? He knows the Astros can't go to any lefties in the bullpen, so it's not like he's going to worry about burning up his bench. Whereas in the Fromber start, he knew he could pinch hit once a righty came into the game because it would be only righties after that. The Twins have a good ball club, right? The Astros aren't much better than them overall in this series. We'll see whether they turn out to be better than them in Minneapolis.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than two decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
So guys, with Jeremy Pena being in a extended home run drought since July, him hitting in front of Maldonado seemingly neutralizes anything he does with the bat, unless there's guys on in front of him. Sunday, Jeremy singles to lead off the bottom of the third. Maldi then abruptly hits into a double play. And then down five, bottom of the fifth, Pena doubles to lead off. And instead of pinch hitting for Diaz when you need runs, Maldi again bats and he grounds out softly into what in all likelihood would have been another double play had Pena been at first. The issue really seems to be the Astros chose to carry guys like John Singleton and Gray Kessinger instead of carrying a third catcher like Cesar Salazar. So they don't have the insurance to sub in Diaz earlier in the event that he gets hurt. So it tells you from the onset that Dusty has no intention of lifting Maldi in these games until, like, Sunday. It's late and the game is all but out of reach. Could Dusty's trust in Martin Maldonado be one of the Astros' biggest weak spots this postseason?
Well, there's no question about that, because it was one of their biggest weak spots over the entirety of the season. And it's not why they lost game two, right? Lopez dominated them. Fromber stunk. But Dusty, on this subject, we're not tilling new earth here. He's a stubborn old goat. And I mean the long-term usage of goat. Goat, the animal. Bad decision-making. And whether he's just dug in, I'm going to do it my way until the end, or whether he actually is ignorant to the statistical realities of the situation, not batting Yiner for Maldonado after a leadoff double in the fifth when you're down 5-0 was plain dumb. And if Yiner gets hurt and you're without a third catcher, so be it, right? They did that some points during the regular season. All right, he finally hits for him later in the game. You need to be aggressive when you're down 5-0. And Yiner came in and popped out. It's not like he was likely to hit a two-run homer to spark a dramatic comeback, but it's about reasonable percentages, intelligent decision-making, right? That cliche about coaches and managers, well, their position, their job is to put players in the best position, the team in the best position to succeed. And at the catcher spot, Dusty has failed to do that way, way too often. And it reared its very ugly head again in game two. Again, it didn't decide the game, but it certainly didn't help a chance of jumpstarting a huge comeback. If it's 1-0 and the runner's at second, okay, Maldonado's going to sacrifice to try to get him to third with one out for Altuve. But 5-0 game, not batting Diaz for Maldonado there. D-U-M. Dumb.
I think it's part of the problem. It's on the other side of the ball. Like, if you gave Dusty truth serum, he probably thought Fromber would have given up 10 runs if Maldi wasn't catching him. You know what I mean? Like, I think he sees it that way, to where, oh, if he's not out there, and oh, Maldi needs to be out there to help Hunter Brown along, he's going to have the same thought process here with Javier. Oh, we got to have Maldi out there calling pitches for Javier, or he doesn't have a chance. But I mean, it doesn't come as any surprise to me, just based off that Mariners and Diamondback series to end the regular season, where you could argue Maldi and Abreu are kind of the heroes for the Astros to get in. So I didn't think for a second we'd see a lot of Yiner. I figured Maldi would be doing all the work behind the plate, and that's what we've seen pretty much. It's unfortunate Maldi doesn't have a hit yet out of the two games, but you know, you also look at Bregman and Tucker combined together, those guys just have two hits. So like Charlie said, it didn't lose you the game. You got to get your Kyle Tuckers, your Alex Bregmans, you got to get those guys going. That's how the Astros win. Dusty's going to keep playing Maldi. There's really no way around it. I'd like to see pinch hitting happen more as well. I'm just kind of done expecting anything to change at this point.
That insanity is seeing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Well, there's also a saying, you're never too old to change. Dusty, wow us. You're running out of time on this. And there's always the possibility in a given game, Maldonado pops a mistake into the bleachers. He hit 15 home runs this year. But it's about body of work. It's about laws of probability. And in game three, you're facing Sonny Gray, who has dominated you regularly in the past. Your pitcher is not very good off what he did the second half of the season. The expectation is you're going to need to put some runs on the board to win. Ditto in game four. So going with one of the worst offensive regulars in the history of the sport over Yiner Diaz at this point, as if Yiner Diaz is the village idiot of receivers, whereas Menza Maldonado solves all, it's just laughable. And you know what? I do think we are at a tipping point, or have already gotten there within the organization. This is one of the reasons Dana Brown is going to want, and whether Dana Brown has the authority to make the call, and whether Jim Crane has been pretty invisible in recent weeks. But I do think this will be part of the Dusty epitaph. They go on to win a World Series. I expect there to be a new manager in 2024.
It's an interesting juxtaposition from Minnesota. You look across to the other opposing dugout, they're pinch hitting with a 5-run lead. You know, they're aggressive in their moves. And also the Twins have their superior defensive catcher on the bench. They're opting to go with their better offensive option. So it is just an interesting comparison between managerial styles and priorities. But to speak to that, I also found it interesting too. Dubon, who's been the center fielder of choice for Dusty for Justin Verlander starts on Saturday, he went with Chaz in center field. Are you guys at least a little curious that we're not seeing, especially given that there's not quite the offensive disparity this year between Dubon and Chaz? Were you surprised to see Chaz start in both games one and two?
I was in game one, given Dusty had been pretty consistent down the stretch of valuing Dubon's defense and the arm specifically back of Verlander. And, you know, with his denseness on the catching situation, it's kind of contradictory in that, hey, I want Dubon in there for the defense because with Verlander on the mound, I expect it to be a low scoring game. We'll scratch out a couple, but we don't need to score 6-7 runs with Verlander there. So, hey, let's make sure the defense is the best it can be. Whereas when facing a really good pitcher, if you're throwing away outs essentially by going with Maldonado, it just don't jive. So, yes, I was surprised in game one. Dusty gave the rationale, the matchup of the pitching style against him. But, you know, Chaz McCormick, who overall just had a sensational season, but he wasn't good in September. OPS September 1st on was 703. He's not had very good swings in this series. Did have the one ground ball single in game one for an RBI. And then a bloop hit, you know, which essentially is a lucky hit, but a lot of bad swing and miss strikeouts, especially in game two. Credit to Pablo Lopez. So, you know, which way do you go? Game three, game four. McCormick still gives you the better power shot. Fairly expansive outfield, though, at Target Field. So do you think Dubon, Javier, a little bit more of a fly ball pitcher? How about the heavy lifting superstar guys? Do that heavy lifting in the road games if the Astros season is going to extend beyond Wednesday.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised to see Chaz out there. We saw them flip the script last season when it was Chaz when the playoffs started. And then if you look at the games they really had to have, the Seattle series and the Arizona series, Chaz started all those games except for the finale after he got hit in the back. And I think that was more about concern about that injury than anything else. I almost feel like Dusty's like, allow me the Maldi and I'll play your Chaz. You know what I mean? Like we get to pick one. I'm going to roll out Maldi. Dana, you get to roll out Chaz. I say that tongue in cheek, but I think there might even be a little something to it, a little bit of compromise going on. So that didn't surprise me with Chaz, but Chaz hadn't been hitting so great in September. Charlie's right. It hadn't looked exactly the same. Dubon has been pretty clutch, but no, it didn't surprise me at all to see Chaz out there in center. I thought that's what they were going to do. We'll see if that changes when they get in a bigger ballpark. But no, over this series, that's what I expected.
To move on to our last topic here, Charlie, you mentioned how we'll see this offseason Dana Brown's influence on this organization in regards to the future of Dusty Baker. We may have gotten our first clues into Dana Brown's vision for the future of the Astros. It's interesting because Brown made some comments last week about how there's going to be some internal promotions. There's a lot of good people within the organization. And he speculated that maybe there would be a half a dozen promotions internally. But this week, the Astros dismissed their farm director, Sarah Goodrum, and assistant GM, Bill Ferkus. What do we read into these moves?
Well, I think Dana Brown, not quite a year into the job, it's natural that he's going to reshape the front office with some of his own guys. And gals, perhaps, notable. I don't think the Astros should be catching any heat for it when a woman in a position where you don't find many women in Major League Baseball loses her job. So be it. A new sheriff comes to town. He's going to appoint some different deputies and change out the staff some. So, you know, assistant general managers, whether it's someone that he's worked with in Toronto or Atlanta that, hey, when I can open up a position, I want you to come there. Or maybe those are promotions from within addressing these couple of positions. But I don't think there's anything really surprising or shocking about it. If Dana Brown's the general manager, he should have the right to flesh out the front office as he sees fit.
Yeah, I'm not surprised they're going to make some moves, but who they decided to get rid of is where I'm kind of like, huh. Bill Ferkus was promoted to assistant GM last offseason after they told Click not to come back after winning the World Series. He was kind of the face of the front office during that period when Crane was kind of running things behind the scenes and they hadn't hired a new GM yet. And, I mean, to me, Ferkus is almost kind of the face along with Bagwell of the Abreu deals and, you know, the Brantley signing and with him being injured this year. And of course, the Montero extension, him finishing with an ERA over five. So I think it's kind of interesting. It looks like kind of Furkus here is taking the bullets for all the back of the baseball card stuff. And that's just me speculating. I'm sure there's a lot of other stuff going on behind the scenes that I'm not aware of. But that's what this kind of looks like to me. And he goes back 10 years with the organization, was with Luno. I don't know if you guys watched that documentary with all those Wall Street guys and that kind of stuff. He's been around those offices. He knows those guys. It shocks me a little bit. They're going to push another Luno guy out, but that's why it jumps out to me. He was kind of the face of all this Abreu stuff. And I wonder if this was Crane and Dana Brown being like, yeah, let's make it look like he's accountable for this. Let's get him out of here.
Look, Dana Brown's a farm system guy, a player development, draft. That's his background. The Astros farm system is weak for a number of reasons. And like they just made one botched pick after another. But the farm system is very weak. And it's why, along with the major league rosters, the Texas Rangers' future over the next several seasons looks much brighter than the Astros. And if the Seattle Mariners go out and ambitiously add Shohei Ohtani's bat, right? Forget about the arm. The Mariners are going to be a real challenge as the Astros are getting toward a transition phase with some age and pitching questions. So for Dana Brown to pursue his vision, especially in terms of overhauling, drafting, and player development, that's what he was foremost brought here to do. So now he can get on with it because he didn't have that opportunity last offseason, getting the job in January.
And that's the bottom line because Stone Cold said so.
And that's going to be it for another episode of Stone Cold Stros. If you enjoyed the show, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcast. Charlie, Josh, and I will catch you next week. But you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports fix. All you have to do is subscribe to Sports Map Houston on YouTube. John Granato, Lance Zierlein, and Josh Jordan will have you covered there. Thanks to Jack Brame for producing behind the scenes. And thanks to everyone for listening. And as always, until next time, go Stros.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.